Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
We're going to talk about COVID-19, and of course, everybody knows it represents a very unprecedented time for us here in Singapore and around the world. We've had Singapore's Trade and Industry Minister Chan Chun Sing recently saying that our country must chart a new path and look to build a new economy and create more and better job opportunities for people.
And robot process automation, or RPA, is a fast emerging technology, and it could very well play a part in making Minister Chan's statements a reality.
It actually sounds scary if you ask me. According to Singapore findings from Blue Prism's annual survey, the report of course is titled The Impact of a Digital Workforce on Business Agility and Survival. And the findings, 92% of business leaders across sectors here believe that RPA, robot process automation, is a catalyst for digital transformation.
They also have plans to extend its use across their organisations. So 79% also believe that RPA offers more to the business than just time and cost savings, and that it's essential for their organisation to remain competitive.
So this is a new term for me. I'm curious about it and how it can be implemented in countries here in Singapore. And on the line to help us out is Dan Turnus, who is Chief Technology Officer, Asia Pacific and Japan at Blue Prism. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Elliot. Good morning, Manisha. Thanks for having me on the show.
And thank you so much for taking the time to help us out. Blue Prism is such an interesting company, and I suppose to break the ice, could you tell us a little bit more about it? What exactly do you guys do?
Sure. Well, first of all, let me say, there's no need to be scared, Elliot. This is not scary stuff.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys.
maybe. What do we do? So we're a British company, or a public company, or a software developer, and back in 2001, we pioneered this concept of robotic process automation. It wasn't called that then. We came up with the name in 2012, and we had just six little customers. But it's fundamentally, it's automation software, process automation, and it's integration software, you know, moving data from systems to systems to systems. These are things that the world has done for decades, probably since the time we created the second computer. We wanted to talk to the first computer. We've been doing integration for a long time. This is taking a different approach to an older problem, and it's a different approach that has really kind of captured the industry's imagination, frankly.
Forgive me, but can you break it down even further for us?
Yeah. Because
we want to understand how this can be implemented into a digital workforce program. And so when we talk about work and we talk about people and then we talk about robot process automation, that's one of the reasons people get very nervous.
Yes. Well, first of all, you know, the first thing to understand is there's no physical machines rolling around on wheels in your organization. These things are software agents. So that's the first thing to not be worried about. We're not going to be tripping over robots. So they're software agents. And really, perhaps the term can be seen as being scary, but it needn't be. What we've done is, it was one of these, I guess, these lighthouse moments when you think, well, such a simple idea. I wish I'd thought of that, but such a profound impact. When we do integration, we're trying to move data from systems to systems, you can think, I've already got all the applications. We work with Microsoft Office, Microsoft Word, Excel, my internal applications, and those applications do all the things we need them to do. If I want to create a new customer, I know how I can log into that application, click that button, type in that field, and hit that save, and it works, and we know that it works, and humans do that time and time again every day. And other integration technologies try to go around that. They try to create something new on the back end. And the light bulb moment that our founders had is, what if we just copied what a human did? What if we create a software agent, a robot, that could understand what was on the screen and understand that that button means save and that button means new and that field means name and that field is NRIC? What if we could just copy all the exact same things the human does, but just get a robot to do it? So that's what we do. In a sense, we train the robot to understand what's on the screen and understand what all the buttons mean, what they do, and what all the fields represent. And then once we know what's on the screen, we can set a series of actions one after the other. And those actions effectively constitute a task and a process. And when I get to the end of the action, I've completed my task and I start again and do it again. So, and this is why I don't think there's any need to be scared about it. It's really just mimicking all of the administrative, typically administrative stuff that humans do every single day. And that's kind of the reason why it's sort of captured the imagination of the industries at the moment is because I'm already using something that already exists, and because I'm already using something that I know works, I'm just replicating what we already do, the effort for me to create some sort of new automation or some new process or to take that administrative and mundane task away from the human is much, much faster and easier and cheaper than doing it with other technologies. And it opens up the opportunity to automate so much more than we might otherwise have been able to do. Hopefully that makes it a little bit more real for you.
Yeah, it certainly does. And I am a little bit less scared. And I love the idea of some robot doing all my admin instead of me.
I know, right? Exactly. The guy that constantly forgets to save his Word document is relieved right now. Which sectors are benefiting from this, though?
Look, it's really across the board. So we're not a specific application. We're not, you know, an airline booking application or invoice processing, but we're all of those things. So we've got customers in over 70 different sectors. Financial services is probably our biggest market, but also in the retail industry, in healthcare. I think we'll talk about that. Government is a big user. Telcos, really across the board. There's no sector that can't benefit from this type of technology because every sector has got these types of administrative and data entry, data processing tasks that they have humans do.
So interesting, according to this study, right, that we were talking about by you guys, 73% of Singapore business leaders are facing difficulties in applying RPA further. 71% feel more thought needs to be put into its application. What do you think is going on here?
You can listen to, you know, people like me speak and it all sounds wonderful. It sounds, so easy, so simple. At the end of the day, what we're doing is complex. And what the companies try to do with our software is also complex. And there is definitely, you know, companies have to approach it the right way. You can do things the right way, you can do things the wrong way. And, you know, obviously we want to do it the right way. So there's a whole methodology behind it. Over and above just the technology, you have to think about cultural implications, there are organizational implications, there are bureaucratic implications. It's more than just the technology. And I think that organizations have been a little bit, you know, perhaps they haven't appreciated all of that. And perhaps they've sort of jumped in and their initial projects, maybe they cut some corners, they don't follow all the best practices, if you like. And then they find that that's not repeatable. You know, I can do something once. And I can, maybe it took me 3 weeks instead of 2 weeks. Maybe I cut a few corners, but nobody really bothers about that. It works. And I got some value and people were excited and they said, wow, fantastic. We can do this throughout the whole organization. And then I try to follow that same approach, repeat, 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 and my errors get amplified. And that's where we sort of hit the brick wall. So there's a technology aspect to getting this right. You know, not all technologies are equal, of course, but as importantly, maybe even more importantly, there's a methodology for how to do it right. And I think that's one of the big things that prevents people from scaling. They get over those humps eventually. You know, sometimes there are some false starts, but the methodology of how you do it is really key.
Could it be because, you know, there was a lot of talk of this need to digitalize and move forward in this area and people were doing it for the sake of doing it. But now with COVID-19, do you think it would be different if you conducted this survey tomorrow where you think that people would pay more attention to all aspects of implementing this?
I think that's a very good question, actually. I haven't thought about it before, but I think they would. I think that there would be certainly a lot of business leaders who would have seen, you know, the difficulties they've had in business continuity and business resilience and have said to themselves, geez, if I had some of these digital workers could, you know, play the roles that some of my human workers, then they wouldn't obviously not have been affected. Sure. Our digital workers, they don't take holidays. You know, they don't get sick. They work 24 hours a day. You know, so that's certainly it. And so that's one aspect to it. But over and above that, we've also seen through COVID-19 many organizations, certainly in the healthcare sector, certainly in the financial services sector, that were just inundated with a series of tasks and requests to do things that were just, you know, there were orders of magnitude beyond their normal volume, and they just could not have done it with the people that they have. Whether those people were in the office or at home, obviously at home exacerbates the problem, but even if they're all in the office, still couldn't have done it. So, yeah, I absolutely think business leaders would have felt that way. And I think the knowledge workers, much the same, because what's happened with COVID is the knowledge workers have been asked to do your normal job. Oh, and also do all these extra tasks as well. As we try to fight these fires.
Yeah.
And obviously that's put a lot of strain on them. And one of the things that the knowledge workers, and one of the facts that came out of it, you say scary. I think people start off being scared until they understand what's really happening. And one of the statistics that came out of it was just the percentage of knowledge workers, even within Singapore, they were really excited about using this technology, because what they start to realize is that it's not a case of me being at risk for losing my job. It's actually me having the opportunity to be a knowledge worker and to use my judgment and my imagination and my empathy and these human skills to be a knowledge worker rather than an automaton. And I think that's the light bulb moment that goes on in the worker's mind when they realize this is not really about trying to get rid of my job. We'd all be scared about that. But it's actually about making my job more compelling and empowering and feeling as though I can make a difference and add some real value. That's why people get excited by it, actually. So, yes, I think do the survey again today, and there'd perhaps be certainly higher numbers of people realizing that this is a viable proposition for many organizations.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't mind a household version of this. Can we just talk, though, about, and you alluded to it there, you have these collaborations here in Singapore, and you did mention the healthcare sector. Just tell us a bit more about those and how important they've been.
Well, they've been fabulously important, I think. Two organisations in Singapore, both dedicated to healthcare, but kind of coming at it from a slightly different angle. One is NUHS, of course, one of the three big healthcare clusters, and the other being IHIS. People may not be as familiar with that term. They're the Integrated Health Information Systems. And IHIS is, for all intents and purposes, the IT arm for the Singapore public healthcare. They handle all of the technology services for them. Okay. Now, with COVID, of course, we'll take NUHS at the outset, you know, faced with this plethora of tests that they need to do on, particularly when the foreign worker dormitory crisis occurred. The volume of tests they need to do is massive. Now, we've all been to hospital, of course, and we've all had blood taken, whatever. You realize that the taking of the blood is the quick part, and the slow part is all of the patient registration, fill out these forms, capture this data, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And NUHS was faced with that same problem. How do I do all the patient registration? How do I then marry up all of the test results with the patient records? And how do I then alert the national registry of the test results? And how do I make a claim to Ministry of Health? You know, these are all the data or the systems operational processes that support the testing. They realized that to do it with humans was going to take 18 hours a day just to capture records. So we'll circle back. With IHIS, similar but a little bit different. IHIS was tasked with managing the technology around all of the isolation facilities the government had set up. And in their case, of course, registrations again, but then we're taking daily temperature readings and attaching those readings to records. And you can imagine lots of data flowing back and forth. And in IHIS's case, their calculation was they were doing 400 registrations, or all of the work around new registrations, 400 a day, and they worked out it was going to take three people 36 hours to do 24 hours worth of work, which, you know, sort of extrapolate that out, that's a team of 10 or 12 people just to do the registrations. Now, here's where I think the payback, obviously we save effort and time and what have you to get all that done, and there's no errors, there's no data entry errors, et cetera. That's obviously important in the world of healthcare. But look, here's the simple thing. When I'm sitting behind the keyboard, I'm doing a critical task, but I'm not helping a patient, okay? Yeah. And that's kind of, there's your payback. You can either do the administrative manual tasks, or we can actually add to patient care. No one's getting healthier when I'm sitting behind the keyboard, right? And that's really the payback in this scenario, is freeing up those staff, the frontline staff, to actually provide patient care rather than tapping away on the keyboard. So it's really, obviously our role is very, very minor compared to the doctors and the nurses and all the frontline staff, both in Singapore and worldwide. But it kind of, you know, makes us proud, I think, to at least say that we could have played some role in helping patient care there.
Yeah, and I think you should be proud, because my main takeaway is I no longer have to go to the 5th floor, to the 8th floor, to the 9th floor, and the 2nd floor, and then I finally get warded. My gosh.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right.
We've been speaking with Dan Tennis, who is Chief Technology Officer, Asia Pacific and Japan at Blue Prism. Dan, thank you for your time. Take care and stay safe.
No problem. Thanks very much, guys. Bye-bye.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.